Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon. It is January 16th, 2013. It is a lovely Wednesday afternoon here in Houston, Texas. And we are at United Orthodox Synagogues, and we are studying the book of Hosea, the seventh chapter of the book of Hosea. And this chapter is actually, one way to look at this chapter is being connected to the next chapter. We're only going to do seven, but seven and eight make up one unit, and we have a number of different sections. We're going to study, like I said, chapter 7. The beginning of chapter 7 is going to discuss certain types of corrupt behavior, more corrupt behavior on the part of the Jewish people. That's going to take us through the first three psukim. The second part of this chapter is going to discuss the corrupt behavior of the leadership, of the royalty, and the other leaders of here we're talking actually Ephraim, of the kingdom of Israel, which is the northern kingdom. And the third part of the book is going to discuss, so the second one is sort of internal corruption, and the third part of the book is external corruption, vis-a-vis their neighbors. And finally, the end of the chapter is going to discuss some of the prophecies of doom that come in the wake of all of this misbehavior. So that's what this chapter is made of, and it continues really from the previous themes as well. So let's look at those first three psukim that make up these first three verses. That make up the first part, if you will. And categorizations comes from the Dat Mikra commentary. This is how the Dat Mikra breaks it up. So these first three verses, beginning on page 1283, it's interesting because the last pasuk from chapter 6, the last verse from chapter 6, which is verse 11, is really broken up half and half, half belonging to the previous chapter and half belonging to this chapter. It's an interesting breakup. Beshuvi Shivut Ami, which is the way it's broken up in our JPS version. When I would restore my people's fortunes, Kiraf'i li Yisrael, when I would heal Israel, V'nigla avon Ephraim, the guilt of Ephraim reveals itself, the ra'ot shomron, and the wickedness of Samaria. Ki pa'alu shaker v'ganav yavo, for they have acted treacherously, with thieves breaking in, pashat gidud bachutz, and bands raiding outside. Uval yomru lilvavam, and they do not consider. Ki ratam zacharti, that I remembered all their wickedness. Ata sivavu ma'alehem neged panai hayu. While their misdeeds have been all around them, they have been ever before me. So what's going on here is as follows. At the beginning of the chapter, God says, when I would restore my people's fortunes, when I would heal Israel, meaning when I want to save them, and when I want to heal their wounds. So how does a doctor heal the wounds of someone who's sick? There are two ways to go about it, right? The doctor could just heal the symptoms of the illness and deal with the outer expressions of the illness, or a good doctor is going to get in there and is going to go to the root cause of the problem, right? So this is what's going on here. When God wants to heal the Jewish people, it just says, "V'nigle avon Ephraim." The guilt of Ephraim reveals itself. Meaning, God is saying, when I want to heal the Jewish people from their illness, I have to show them. I have to take into consideration. I have to recall all the real illness. Right? I can't just do this on a surface level. The Jewish people are in trouble. They have lots of ills, and I'm going to reveal them. And when those illnesses are revealed, Right? V'nigle avon Ephraim, v'ra'ot shomron, kipalu sheker, for they acted treacherously. That's their first sin. Right? They've acted treacherously. V'ganav yavo. This is their custom. Right? They come in at night, and they steal from people. We've seen this on other places in this Navi as well. And not only that, do they steal, sort of in secret, Pashat Gedud Bachutz, even in the broad daylight, outside, right? Even outside, they set up, we saw this in the previous chapter too, they set up these bands of thieves that sort of ambush you on the road. And so there's like, it's lawless. There's a complete lack of respect for personal property. And this is happening both privately and in the broad daylight, right? Bachutz, outside, which really spells a terrible situation. It's one thing if you're going to sin, right? Then at least do it in private, right? If you're going to be a thief, at least do it so no one sees it. Obviously, God sees, but at least people have still some shame vis-a-vis other people. But here, the Navi specifically says, this is bachutz, this is going on outside. There's not even a sense of shame vis-a-vis other people. And even once that's clear, what happens? Even once that's clear, uval yomru l'vavam, and they do not consider kol ratem zacharti. They don't even consider the fact that I know all of this, right? I know all of what's going on, and neged panai hayu. All of this is open in front of me, and I don't forget. I don't forget any of it.
People and God,
right?
Like there was no awareness.
Of that's a perfect word, because later in the perek, we're going to see that language. I think it's if you just quickly move ahead to verse 13 of this chapter, it says, "Oy lahem ki nadadu mimeni." Woe to them for straying from me. It's not just straying from me. There's separation. Right? There's this, like you said, there's a disconnect. And that's what that is exactly the lament of the Navi here. He's lamenting this disconnect between God and what's supposed to happen. And how they're supposed to act. And so now, we have this problem of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, right, between people and between individuals, and now it's gonna move to the level of the leaders, right? What happens here? Baratam yisamchu melech, in malice, they make the king merry. Uvichachashehem sarim, and officials in treachery. Meaning, what's the job? What's the job of a leader? What's the job of the melech?
To keep the people safe.
Right, to keep the people safe. The first, most basic requirement of the government. That's why we elect them, and that's why we're willing to give up some of our absolute freedoms in exchange for protection, roads, an army, safe borders, right? The government's role is to protect us. So that's not going. Not only is the government unable to defend against any of this stuff, that's what it makes them happy. They like the fact that there's all of this laws. Now, why? Presumably, it's not in here, but it's not hard to figure out the reason. They're getting paid off, right? These bands of how does it work with the mafia? Why in the old days did the police, so whatever, you know, let the mafia operate? Because whatever the mafia was taking in, the police were getting a piece of the action, right? So the same thing's going on here. The police, the kings, they're getting paid off. And so they like this. This makes them happy. Kulam minafim. They commit adultery, all of them. So the commentaries take this in two ways. Does it mean that really all of the leaders are literally committing adultery? Maybe. We have this notion of Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto, that a verse has to be understood first and foremost in its straightforward sense. Okay, so it could mean that everyone's engaged in lechery, in adultery, but it could also mean adultery is just being right? The definition of adultery is being unfaithful. So the leadership is being unfaithful to the people by not taking care of them, by not protecting them. They commit adultery, all of them, and now we're going to use a lot of this imagery of a baker and an oven, like an oven fired by a baker who desists from stoking only from the kneading of the dough to its leavening. Right, so they're all they're kulam minafim. They're all involved in this adultery, or again, they're all being dishonest. Kmo tanur bo erama ofe. Right, they their desire to rule and to be in charge is compared here to the heat of a baker's oven, which is stoked. Right, it's stoked. Yishbot me'ir. They commit adultery, all of them, like an oven fired by a baker who desists from stoking only from the kneading of the dough to its leavening. They're constantly stoking the fire, except for this small amount of time. Right. So according to Rashi, he says from the time he thinks of the evil in his heart, how he will do it, he rests and sleeps until morning when he can do it. Just as the baker rests from the kneading of the dough until it leavens, when he can bake it. Right. There's only a small break of when you're not stoking the fire. The only time you're not stoking the fire is when the bread's not in the oven. Right, when the bread is rising, you don't need the fire to be hot. But when the bread is in the oven, it needs to be hot. So the same thing here. Just like the baker is constantly stoking the fire, except for that small window when it doesn't need to be hot, same too. These people are always engaged in planning and carrying out their behavior. The only time they're not is when they're sleeping. That's a terrible thing to say, right? The only time you're not engaged in something terrible is when you're asleep.
So Rabbi Gellin, it would seem to me that, like, it's not something that happened overnight. Like, to sink to this level.
Right, well, this has been really happening. It's from the breakup. One could say this is going on from the breakup of the kingdoms from after Shlomo, when you have the first of that evil king of Yeravam ben Nevat. And this is all, you know, following in the footsteps of that. Now we're much further along, but there's just, you know, one king after the other king.
Like, wouldn't they think that, wow, Mashiach must be coming any day now because
it's so bad?
So bad.
I don't know. Well, we've seen it get much worse for the Jews, at least, over the course of history, and Mashiach hasn't come. So this is a terrible picture that's being painted, that the leadership is constantly planning on evil, and it's building on this notion that when's a good time for the baker to go to sleep? When the bread is rising, because they can't do anything. Nature has to take its course. But whenever there's an opportunity to plan for the evil, he's planning on doing it. Okay. And then we have the day. This is really a scary verse. Yom Malkenu Hechelu Sarim Chamat Miyayin Mashach Yado Et Lo Tzitzim. The day they made our king sick and officials with the poison of wine, he gave his hand to traitors. So here it seems that the Navi is depicting what goes on in the halls of leadership, literally in the palace of the king. They just have a party. And everyone gets drunk, so drunk that the king is sick, right? They're not, instead of taking care of what they have to take care of, instead of taking care of all this theft and trying to develop the morality of the people, they're just engaged in a big party. And so much so that they're getting sick. And then, actually, some suggest that it actually leads to the murder of the king, because if you jump ahead to verse 7, it says, they all get heated like an oven, there's that oven again, and devour their rulers, none of them calls to me, all the kings have fallen by their hand. So there's treachery going on, there's like a coup that the kings are actually being killed. The bottom, on the footnotes here, of my Dot Mikra commentary, it notes that there were a lot of kings that were killed, and families that were killed within a small period of time, Beit Yeravam, Beit Basha, Zimri, Beit Amri, Beit Yehu, Shalom ben Yavesh, Pekachya ben Menachem, right, a whole bunch of kings who are killed. So the Navi is saying, this is what's going on. It's a horrible situation, not only in terms of the way the people are acting, it's a horrible situation politically, the role models are corrupt, no one's trying to fix everything, and everyone is just profiting off of everyone else's dishonesty and corruption. Verse 6, Ki kervu kitanur libam ba'arbam, for they approach their ambush with the hearts like an oven through the night. Their baker has slept, in the morning it flares up like a blazing fire. Then comes verse 7. So back again to this this imagery of the hot oven, which is the people are just sort of, you know, all consuming. It's like the fire of the oven consumes everything in their path. So these people are consuming everything in their path. Okay, so that's sort of the first two sections where we have a problem of ben adam lechaviro, interpersonally. There's all this theft and these bands of thugs, and then you have the immorality of the leadership. That not only are they profiting, that they are also profiting from all of this terrible behavior, and therefore they condone it, or at least look away, and they're certainly not trying to fix it, which leads to all sorts of political problems of political assassinations. And now the Navi turns his attention to other corruption vis-a-vis the other nations. What's going on here? Ephraim ba'amim hu yitbolel. That word yitbolel is what we use in modern Hebrew, hitbolelut, right, is the modern Hebrew word for assimilation. So Ephraim is among the peoples. He is rotting away. It's interesting. That's how one way to understand assimilation, right? It's slowly but surely the Jewish people start to disappear, to rot away, to dissipate. Ephraim is like a cake incapable of turning. This is interesting. So some commentaries talk about here the fact that whenever any of the kingdom of Israel specifically here, was in trouble from any of its neighboring kingdoms, it would turn to another non-Jewish kingdom for help, and in turn that non-Jewish kingdom would not only not help them, but would also attack them and turn them into a tribute, like the Jews would be now have to pay high taxes to the nation that came to protect them, and then because there's a mix of the people, there is there's assimilation, and this is a very strong image. Ephraim is like a cake incapable of turning. Here, what seems to be going on is you think everything's going to be good because you're going to turn to these other nations, but it's not going to be good. It may look good, like the top of a cake when you put it in the oven. It gets cooked, it gets baked right away. It looks good. But if you don't turn it over, what happens? The top gets cooked, baked, but the bottom never gets its crust. The bottom never gets finished the way it's supposed to do. So it all may look good, but if you just flip it over, you're going to see that the other side is not cooked fully. And so that's the imagery, again, back to using the same imagery of the baker's oven, that you're being fooled if you think that assimilation or that asking these other nations for help is going to help you. You are fooled. What's going to happen? Achlu zarim kocho. Strangers have consumed his strength. V'hu lo yada. But he has taken no notice. Gam seva zarkabo. Also, mold is scattered over him. It's obvious that something's wrong, right? When you see something that's moldy, it's clear that there's something wrong. V'hu lo yada. But you pay no attention. Meaning, the writing, just to take a phrase back from Daniel, the writing is on the wall. It's obvious that you're falling apart. You even know that you're, you should know that you're falling apart, but you refuse to see it. It's like, I'm sure we all could think of examples in our day and age too of people we see are making decisions which we think are so obviously bad decisions for their Jewish future, for their future, but they seem to be oblivious to it. That's what's going on here. So I guess the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? People are making terrible decisions. It's obvious, and people are not paying attention. And so that's what's going on here, vis-a-vis the other the other nations. And now we can turn our attention to what's going to happen. And in so we could look to verse 13. Oy lahem. So God says, Oy lahem, woe is to them. Ki nadadu mimeni, for straying from me. Okay, they have strayed from me. Showed lahem, destruction to them. Ki pashu vi, for rebelling against me. Now the next verse is understood two ways. The next line. One with a question mark. Va'anochi efdeim. Vehema dibru alaych zavim. You expect me to be their redeemer? But they're plotting against me.
So why do they show it as a past tense?
Because they're taking the different understanding. I'll get to that next. One understanding is with a question mark. It's woe to them for straying from me, destruct to them for rebelling against me, and you expect me, or they expect me, to just show up like a knight in shining armor to redeem them. They haven't done any tshuva. They haven't fixed themselves at all. That is one way to understand this. The other is va'anochi efdeim. I, and this is the way I think that the dat mikra here explains it. No, actually, the dat mikra says bit miha with wonder. Right? If it's in fact that they have plotted against me, I can't forgive them anymore. And to redeem them from their enemies. Others say, for I was their redeemer, meaning even though they've been in a terrible position before, I've helped them. They should trust me. They should do what I asked them to do, and they still don't. Yet they have plotted the treason against me. So two ways to read this verse. One of them saying, seems like B'nai Yisrael is expecting redemption here, and the Navi or Hashem is saying, but they expect me to redeem them. And the other is, even though I have already redeemed them in the past, they're still not showing me the loyalty that I expect, that I deserve.
Says here that they're going to other nations to ask for help, but only I can save them.
Ah, okay. So that's saying va'anochi efdeim. That's a third translation for I will be their redeemer. Okay.
Only I
can do it. Like, which actually works in context of the other verses, because the other verses have been saying, you're going to these other places, you're going to look for them to help you. Not only are they not going to help you, but you're going to be assimilated into them, and that's not going to work. Okay, well, finishing up the chapter, v'lo za'aku elai bilibam, but they did not cry out to me sincerely. Meaning they're crying out to me, but it's not sincere. Why? Ki ye Yelilu al mishkivotam al dagan v'tirosh yitgoraru. Also, some different translations here. One is, as they lay wailing, they are afraid over new grain and wine. Yitgoraru is translated by some as afraid, meaning that's when they call out to me. When they need food, when their sustenance is not being taken care of, that's when they're afraid, and that's when they call out to me. Because that's when they need me. But when everything is okay, then they forget me. Another translation is when they are so bountiful, when everything is good, when they have new wine and they have new grain, then that's when they forget me, because everything's good. It's sort of the same. It's sort of this similar idea. Just a question of how you understand yitgoraru. Yitgoraru is they're afraid, and so they're afraid regarding the new grain or wine, and that's the only time they're afraid. Or yitgoraru is that's when they visit with me, meaning that's when they rebel against me. They rebel against me when everything's good because they don't need me. They are faithless to me. Either way, they don't show real faith. Va'ani yisarti chizakti zirotam. I braced, I strengthened their arms, and they plot evil against me. I'm the one who gives them the strength, right? I've given them strength. I've given them hope. I've redeemed them before, and nonetheless, they plot evil against me. Yashuvu lo al hayu. They come back. They have been of no use, like a slack bow. Now, this is not a great translation, slack bow. The commentaries say this is not a slack bow. This is a bow that backfires. Right? This is how bad it is. They think they're shooting the arrow against in one direction, and it actually backfires and shoots them. Right, that's how bad it is. Their officers shall fall by the sword because of the stammerings of their tongues. Such shall be the result of their jabbering in the land of Egypt. Again, the land of Egypt represent them turning to Egypt for help when they should have turned to God. The commentary here says when it talks about Egypt, says as follows. He says, "Yesh omrim shezel la'agam shel halo agim al bnei Ephraim shebatchu al kaneh haratzutz malchut Mitzrayim." They relied on help from Egypt, and that's what God is saying. Going back to this notion of this. The slack bow. He says as follows: Keshet she'enena mora al chitzeha l'tzad shirotzeha dorech umishiva et chitzeha achor at shemakom lifgov matara pogat hakeshet bedorech atzmo. So it backfires himself, or it could be that you think you're going to be shooting, meaning God is expecting you to shoot in one direction, to behave in one direction, and just like an archer, though, who's unreliable, all of a sudden turns around and shoots in the other in the other direction. Either way, this is a situation where they are doomed. Right, so that's why I think slack bow is not the great. Well, that's not the way the commentaries translate it. They don't, as a slack bow, more as a bow that backfires, or as an archer who is not reliable and shooting in the wrong directions. Here, maybe it's better a deceitful bow. Rashi says, when one wishes to shoot with it toward the north, shoots toward the south. By going to Egypt, they did not save themselves as they had hoped, but they brought about their destruction. And they thought that Egypt was going to help them, and like a bow that backfires, it actually harmed them. So so this chapter is a continuation of the tochacha, if you will, of the admonition that Hosea is giving to the Jewish people, both the individual citizen. As well as the leadership, and the leadership is at fault for not doing what the most basic thing that leadership should do is take care of their charges, and not only that, they are profiting from the corruption, and that's why they are allowing it to continue. Okay.